SafetyFM.com with Jay Allen. Changing safety cultures, one broadcast and one podcast at a time.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Safety FM with Jay Allen. I hope everything is good and grand inside of your neck of the woods as we are hanging out on this lovely Tuesday, April the 9th of 2024. Almost said 2021. I don't know what's going on. I think I'm lost. I'm totally lost. So anyways, we're going to sit down today and we're going to go back past in some of the time of when we were hanging out in Wollongong at the Global Safety Innovation Summit that was taking place down there in Australia as we got to hang out and do some cool things. But today we're going to sit back and take a listen to a little presentation that occurred by Kim and Greg while they were actually there in Wollongong. Now, here's the thing. I did not have the opportunity to interview them right after their presentation, but I want you to take a listen to what they had to say, because I thought it was so interesting for you to sit back and take a listen to today on Safety FM with Jay Allen. So let's go back in time and take a listen to what occurred down in good old Australia back at the Global Safety Innovation Summit 2024.
Now, you'll notice that Greg and I, Greg helped me onto stage because I'm badly injured. I'm no longer on the world surfing tour. But I thought it was a nice symbol, Greg, for how legal risk management and the practical application of new view approaches can go hand in hand. What do you think?
Maybe. We'll see how we go.
I'm baiting Greg there.
All right.
Yeah, so anyway, so a lot of us, we've been on this HOP journey, as we can call it, for some time now. So we've read the books, we've listened to the podcasts, we read Ben Hutchinson's articles that he puts out daily. Where's Ben? We try to anyway, so thanks, Ben. You do a great job. But we're excited and we're passionate about it, right? So can I see a show of hands as to who has been operationalising this inside their organisation? For either a little while or a long while. Okay, I think there's great representation here in doing that. So we take our investigations and we see the limitations with them. We've seen how they've become corrupted and we start to introduce learning teams, or we call Mark Alston and we get his event insights process in place. We see the limitations with our behaviour-based management processes and walks and observations, and we replace them with work insights. And I've heard some really great terms for those processes over the last few days. We do decluttering, we do restorative culture. And, you know, these things go well inside our organisation. We see the benefit of them, we see the payoff, and we start to go down that rabbit hole of embedding them and making them sustainable long after we leave and whatnot. However, I think, and something that Greg has been talking to about, and I finally got my head around, I think it's brilliant what Greg is suggesting here, is that these new view approaches can become corrupted in just the same way our old view approaches have. Now, we all know how our old view approaches become corrupted, right? So we see like tick and flick of take fives, we count them, they get stored somewhere, no one looks at the quality of them. We raise bogus hazards because we have to report so many hazards each month. I'm sure there's many, many examples in the room of how these things become corrupted, and that's part of our frustration, right? The challenge is, though, in operationalising HOP for some time in many different organisations, I've also seen how the new view approaches can also become corrupted. So many years ago, I was working with some great people at water utilities in Queensland, and we were having great success in operationalising HOP. And I was in a board meeting, and we were reporting on our learning teams, both quantitatively. We had a beautiful Power BI dashboard, and we were reporting on the stories as well, like what Ivan was talking about yesterday. And anyway, a well-meaning board member, he was a massive pain in the ass, this board member, he said, "Kim, you've done two this month. Last month you did seven. Last month you did, the previous month you did five. What's going on? Does this mean we're less safe?" And I suddenly felt this pressure to, like, get these learning teams up, get the work insights up. But I knew if we did that, the quality of them would go down pretty quick, right? Soon enough, they're going to become corrupted in the same way that the old approaches have. So I think what Greg has done, he's posed this great question to us on LinkedIn and various places over the conference. And the question is, and I feel like you're like a canary down the coal mine, Greg. You know, you're kind of like warning us. No, but it's great, right? Because you're really making us think about these things that we're putting into place. So the question is how do we integrate new view HOP processes and approaches and tools with legal risk management and ensure it's not corruptible in the same way that our traditional approaches are? So I think this is a brilliant question, because at the end of the day, we want these practices to be sustained. Now, here in Australia, for the Australians in the room, you all know about Section 27 of the Act, if you don't quickly Google it, okay? So that's your officer obligation, which we need to fulfil. And you know about the WHS Act. It's based on a retributive model. As Greg said yesterday, in many ways, it's anti-learning. All right, and we've increased our industrial manslaughter penalties. We now have increased individual penalties, and they're not going to go down anytime soon. I think in the next 20 years, we're probably stuck with them, Greg. They might
We have a model of regulation that's entirely unfit for purpose. It's just bullshit, but anyway.
Yeah. Greg's going to tell us what he really thinks. I love about Greg. So this is a great challenge, right? Now, we're not doing new view approaches just to tick the legal compliance box. However, I'm of the opinion, and Greg and I are discussing and unpacking this here today, as to how we can structure our new view approaches and operationalise them in such a way that strengthens our legal risk management position. I'll go so far to say strengthen, but, you know, at least tick that box, but also tick all the other the goals we have. So, Greg, over to you.
We'll get into
to
it.
Talk us about this argument of corruptibility for us.
So I'm going to stand up because it's an occupational hazard. When you're a lawyer, this will become relevant. How you all going? G'day. You having fun? Everyone feeling inspired? Yeah, well, hold that thought. It's about to turn to shit. I'm a lawyer. Get over it, all right? It's what I do. It's what I do, and we're an important part of the social framework. Give you a bit of context. I spend a lot of time in counselling these days. That's not a... It's not a joke, you wankers. I'm currently briefed on 9 fatalities. I spend a lot of time around dead bodies. My job is to keep people out of jail, all right? I suspect somewhere along the line I've probably got a bit of post-traumatic stress from being involved in the shit I've got to be involved in. It's really hard work. It's really hard work. I enjoy it at some levels, but I don't enjoy it at others, and the legal side of it is important. I'm not suggesting for the slightest second that any of you in the room should be doing safety for the purposes of legal risk management, but it sure as shit should be on the list. All right? It matters, and it really matters to the people at the top of the organisations who are going to get sent to jail for 10 years, potentially. Well, we'll see. Anyway, what am I talking about? I'm talking about this. So I'll be really quick. We've got kind of 10 minutes. I'll do 10, 15 minutes, and then Kim's got some more stuff to say. You do a lot of shit in safety, right? You do a lot of stuff. Right, so, and the stuff that you do in New View Safety looks pretty much exactly like the stuff you used to do in old safety. You give it better titles and you've got a better philosophical point of view, but it kind of looks the same. And there's not a magistrate. If the sort of crap, I don't mean that in a pejorative sense, but the sort of crap you've been talking about at this conference, if you stand up in front of a magistrate in a sentencing decision because you've got 2 dead bodies on the ground and you talk about what you talk about here, they will not have a fucking clue what you're talking about. All right? The judicial system has absolutely no idea about any of this. All right? Legal decisions get published every day about people who have been prosecuted. Go and read them and see if you can find anything that's got anything to do with anything you people talk about. There's nothing there. There's nothing there. None of you are in the witness boxes as experts saying, oh, you know, we let them vary locally and, you know, you fucking lost his arm, whatever. You've got to have a better voice. The health and safety industry has got to have a better voice around regulation, legislation, these ideas, if you want it to go anywhere. All right? Just a thought. So you do stuff. That stuff is meant to have a purpose or objective. It's meant to achieve something, right? We're not just doing it for the sake of doing it. Yeah. It's meant to have a purpose or an objective. So I'm going quick. It's supposed to be successful in its own right. If you are sending managers around to talk to your people, it's meant to achieve something, yeah? Yeah, all right. What it achieves, we don't know. So it's supposed to contribute to stuff, okay? And so Dave and Drew, I've pinched from their model around, you know, demonstrated safety and social safety and da-da-da-da-da. It's meant to be safety. Kurt, thank you for the presentation. I think that's one of the very few organisations I've ever seen that even tried to define safety. right? Because we actually don't know what this shit is. So we don't know what safety is. So is it contributing it? But one of the things we're trying to demonstrate is legal risk management. All right, that's got to be part of it, I think. It's in there. The stuff you do is corruptible. It's subject to assumptions. Now, what's one of the assumptions we have when we send managers out to talk to people? Well, the assumption is they know how to talk to people. Okay? You're only laughing because it's true. We all have people who work in our organisations who are technically brilliant at what they could do, and if we could lock them under the stairs with a computer, they would do great work for us, and we would never let them out to talk to any other stakeholder, but for some reason we think that all these numpties can go out and talk to our workers about safety, and they can't. And there is a reasonable prospect that a lot of what you are doing in the name of health and safety is making things worse. Just something to think about. It's corruptible, it's full of assumptions. We did a whole exercise yesterday, we whiteboarded all this stuff, it was fun. It's full of stuff. What's that say? Oh yeah, unstated and unverified assumptions. We don't talk about this stuff in the open. No, we just assume, oh, it's all good, it's all running along. Not here, I'm talking about outside in the rest of the world. This wouldn't happen here. Again, and the purpose is often unstated and unverified. So we're doing management walkarounds because it's meant to do something, but we never go and ask, has it done that thing? All right, we don't do that. Because of this, right? Who has something that looks like a monthly health and safety report? Right. I have been doing this for 35 years. I had two sentencing decisions at the end of the year, both for fatality events, both guilty pleas, da da da. Do you know how many times I have been able to pick up a health and safety report from an organisation and go, Your Honour, here is the evidence that this organisation was doing everything reasonably practicable? Zero. What the hell are you doing? You're burning time and energy producing a bunch of crap that doesn't tell you anything about what you need to know. And I'm not talking just forget the legal side of it. Forget it. You do not have a single traffic light metric in your organisations anywhere ever that tells you anything about the safety of your organisation. It tells you how much shit people have been doing, and that is all. And even that's an assumption. All right? We measure activity, and sometimes we ask people how they're going. We do like a climate survey. All right? Drew's, I don't know if Drew's in the room, but you go outside of safety, a whole body of literature about the corruptibility of surveys. And we just hang on to them. Anyway, it's bullshit. So we measure that. We don't measure or test whether anything achieves its purpose. We're not doing anything around that, so I'm going to be quick. Proper systems, adequate supervision, that's your working definition of reasonably practicable for the people in Australia. Do you know if you have proper systems? Do you know if they're implemented and effective? Two dead bodies on the ground, that is the only conversation you're having. All right? Nobody is talking to you about learning teams or 4D conversations or Hopper. No one. This is all we're talking about. We don't care what it looks like. No one gives a shit how you do safety. We just want to know that it works. All right. The stuff we do doesn't matter. Yep, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't contribute to the legal risk management question. So as you're sitting here right now, here's your classic test. You're sitting here right now, your phone rings in your pocket, boom, fall at height, fatality at work, you've got two dead bodies on the ground. As you sit here right now, what do you know about whether your system to manage working at height risk was fit for purpose and prior to the accident it was implemented and effective? Because if you do not know the answer to that question as you sit here right now, you are not even at the starting line of this race. So what have we been doing if we can't answer those questions? And finally, I think this is finally, and I'm going to do one other thing. There is nothing in the new view of safety, there's nothing inherent or intrinsic in the new view of safety that makes it any better for legal risk management. Nothing. Some of the ideas look really good. I think when you talk to the people who do HOP and learning teams and 4D conversations and some of those other mechanics really, really well, there's some gold nuggets in there that we can use to unearth the information we need to answer the questions, but it's not intrinsic, it is not inherent, and it can be. There will be people out there at some point in the future who will have an online learning teams package that unsophisticated organisations will download and do a really shit job of. Okay, and then there will be an organisation that promotes itself as a new view of safety and it'll have a fatality and their new view will have all the credibility of behavioural-based safety. That's the risk we run. Now, and I want to share one more thing with you. So that's it. The slides will be available. You can have all of this. I just want to talk about this for a minute, and that's why this is important. I'm going to explain the difference between complexity and wickedness. This is my daughter, Amy. She's 14. All right, one of the loves of my life. She's an amazing kid. This is a 5x5 Rubik's Cube. I know there's at least one cuber in the room. All right, if you've never been to a speed cubing competition, get yourself out there and have some fun. Yes, I can solve it. It takes me about 10 minutes. I solve a 3x3, I can solve a 4x4, and I can solve a 5x5. This is a complex problem. My daughter is the current Australian national champion for solving this blindfolded. Right?
Yeah.
And I've been waiting forever to tell an audience that. What they do, they bring this out under a box. And you, when you're ready, you take the box off and you look at it, and you've got an hour. And you look at it, and you can you memorise that. Then you put your blindfold on. Then they put a piece of paper between or cardboard between you and the cube, and you solve it. She has a Western Australian state record for doing that, 11 minutes, 41 seconds of looking, memorising, solving. That is a complex problem. It's a complex problem. But you know what? There's a solution to it. You can solve it. You can learn the algorithms. You can fix it. You can finish it. And when it's done, you know it's done. You can solve it. You cannot solve wicked problems. Safety is a wicked problem. You cannot solve it. You will not finish doing it. You will not get it right. It will always be fragile. It will always be brittle. You can never stop. You can never stop. The only thing that keeps bodies off the ground is vigilance. Curiosity. Okay? Curiosity with extreme prejudice. That's what we need. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg.
You're up.
So my 14-year-old's really good at TikTok, Greg. That's what she's got. I found that out. Oh, my gosh, she can do that. That's incredible. Well, mine can't. So, Greg, I think, you know, when we hear that argument, we might want to just go cry in the corner for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll dust ourselves off and we'll start to think about, well, okay, this is a great challenge, right? So, you know, we take on board this challenge where we're doing this inside organisations. I think you've, you know, raised a really good question for us. So what might be, without creating a huge rod for our back, what might be some of the mitigations we can put in place to ensure these new view approaches aren't corruptible and, you know, we're doing as much as we can. Now, yesterday we did a workshop and we brainstormed this, right? So we thought, okay, well, this is a great challenge for us. Let's use the brains trust that we have in the room to, you know, start to explore this. Greg, you got a book coming out in 2 weeks.
No, we're not selling. We're not selling. We're not talking about things.
Sorry. Might have the answers for us. But we're going to come up with them today, right? So, Greg, tell us, so you come up with four different ways. We came up with a bunch more yesterday in our workshop, and I'll put something up on LinkedIn about some of the other things. But the first one you said was, I think we need to begin by, first of all, surfacing these assumptions that are held by the executive, by the board, by the leadership team, and also how our old view approaches and our new view approaches are currently being corrupted. Now, I'm going to bet my bottom dollar if you ask your leaders that question, they're going to know how the current approaches are corruptible. And they're going to come up with perhaps a number of assumptions. And I think a key one is going to be that that beautiful monthly report that we spend hours on, to your point, we're actually making the huge assumption that that's telling us about how we're going with our due diligence obligations, but also how we're progressing in safety. So what are some of those other assumptions?
Well, Ben, I don't know if you're in the room, Ben put it up before he had the Piper Alpha report, and the idea that the assumption that if things weren't working, they'd be brought to our attention.
Mm-hmm.
There's almost an identical passage in the Pike River Royal Commission disaster that they assumed that management would bring anything to their attention. So we've got an assumption problem, and I think you're right. We need to surface. I think the starting point for us all, the foundation for all of this, is a strongly held, genuine commitment to the idea that nothing we do works. Okay? And if we can start from that point and say, there's no guarantee that anything we are doing is working, and my job is to understand the extent to which it's failing or being successful. That probably helps. But the idea of surfacing assumptions and corruption. So, you know, you talked about learning teams before and saying, well, and, you know, this idea of more is better. No, so if we're doing six a month, we do 12, it's more is better. And I think we need to dampen that down. But everything we are creating by way of information for the executive or the management or whoever at whatever level of the organisation, we should be very overt and have a common narrative around the assumptions required to make this successful and whether they actually exist, and how organisation power, politics and pressure corrupts process. And I think we just need to be talking about it openly and honestly.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't think there's any harm in it.
Yeah, I think we could talk about this with our boards, our executives, our frontline leaders who are engaging in these processes, who are recipients of that end information, you know, and thinking that it's telling us about our safety journey. So I think we could start to have these conversations. I think that's a really great starting point. The next one you spoke about, Greg, was focusing on criticality. So we've all got finite resources, time, money. We can't run learning teams and insights on everything. So do you want to tell us about that, Greg, and how we hone that a little bit more?
I don't think there's a lot to say about that. I mean, Kurt, you touched on that before. You focusing on criticality, what matters, da, da, da. And we talk about it a lot, but Jesus, we get distracted easily. Mm. We just get, you know, we're focusing on criticality. Old mate broke his finger. Oh my God, it's all about fingers. You know, and I get that. I get it. I understand it. But the focusing on criticality matters, I think. And I don't think there's much more to say about that. I don't think there'd be too many people in the room who'd have a problem.
Yeah, we could keep that like as a rule of thumb. Yeah. Okay, and the next one was, really examining and... thanks, Greg.
Yeah.
I like it as rule of thumb. Reviewing whether the issue that we're looking at was a one-off departure or whether it was a systemic failure. And I think work insights, learning teams is a fantastic tool for understanding that. I think Ivan's presentation yesterday about really capturing that narrative and that story, you know, is just hugely valuable. For understanding this. So how can we weave that in a little bit more, Greg? Because that's really the premise of the legal risk management question.
We run into this all of the time. We're very localised in what we do, often with what we do with safety. So, you know, an incident happens and under any view of safety, there's normally a gap in training or non-compliance with the process or whatever, and that's fine. And we fix it for that event. The question is, does that particular issue, that failure, that whatever deviance, however you describe it, does that actually represent a one-off departure from our otherwise good processes, or is there something systemic going on here? Is this broader across our organisation? What is this actually telling me? And again, if you think about the tools, so some of your conversation tools, some of your learning teams. So learning teams as a model, I don't know problems with it. I can see how it might fail in the future, but as a model, I think it's a great idea. So instead of incidents being an opportunity for answers, they're the driver of the question. We shouldn't be actually coming up with corrective actions out of investigations at all. What we should be coming up with is what's the thing we have to explore based on what this incident is telling us, and going and asking the question, doing the learning team. Is supervision a problem? Do our people understand our procedures? There's a cracker of a coroner's inquest involved Santos and a contractor fatality, and one of the findings at the end of it was, we produce, it's almost like Ben's presentations. We do this stuff and we create documents that are capable of being audited, but the information in this inquiry reveals that workers found the documents hard to understand and of limited relevance to their daily activities. All right. Well, there's a start point. Let's go find out if our people understand our documents and if they're relevant, which is what you've all been talking about in kind of, and to borrow Jeff's language, a lot of little micro experiments to go and talk to workers and understand. Let's get broad and deep and wide and really get into the guts of our organisation to understand this stuff. That's what I'd be saying.
And then the fourth one, I don't know if this is yours, Greg, or if it just came out of the workshop yesterday, but Section 27, due diligence obligations, element 6, Kurt spoke about it, verification. How can we use that element of verification to really strengthen these approaches, old view and new view, right?
My biggest... So here's... This is where you disappear up your own backside in about 15 minutes, all right?
Not me personally.
Because what's the problem with any verification we put on top of this? It's subject to assumption and corruption, all right? So you can say, oh, we're going to have this, we're now introducing this new program because we heard this bloody lawyer talk and we thought he was crackerjack, and you know, we're going to do this new verification program, and what does it show up as? A metric in the health and safety report, all right? It is just relentless curiosity is the only thing that gets us through this. We just have to be relentless, 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 question, ask. And personally, we get rid of all the numbers. Safety is a narrative. It is not a number.
Yes.
Create a narrative board report where you go to the board and you say, this is what we are concerned about. This is what we looked at to understand our concern. Based on what we looked at, this is what we think. And that's it, I think. I think that's it. Get rid of the numbers. They don't help. They hurt. They hurt. They create an illusion of safety. They're not helpful for us at all.
So maybe there's some education process we can be doing with our executive as we wean them off the quantitative numbers and we start to introduce more qualitative narrative reporting. We can link it back to the legal risk management process as in terms of the why we're providing so much narrative to them.
Yeah.
Or some succinct narrative anyway.
I think it doesn't have to be so much. It just has to be... just has to be consistent and honest. And yes, before anybody says it, yes, the process of doing that kind of reporting and information sharing is subject to assumptions and corruptions. All right. The difference is, if you've got that narrative, we've got 59 seconds. If you've got that narrative-based report, you can interrogate and understand that. All right. If you've got a green traffic light against management conversations, you cannot unpick that and test it. So, this is testable, challengeable, accountable. I think this is not a perfectly developed idea. We're on a journey together here, folks, but there's something there.
Hand in hand.
Hand in hand. Like the steps.
We've got 30 seconds left for questions, Jeff. Is that enough time to take a couple of questions?
Thank you, guys. We have more time than that. We have a bit more time than that, because this is really worth it, huh? Five questions. Greg, I love you, but I'm going to need you to get to the point and tell us what you really think.
Okay.
Why is that funny? Oh, my goodness. We talk about retributive safety legislation, but has a company head ever actually been sent to jail for a fatality in Australia?
There have been 3 terms of imprisonment imposed in Australia, all on small business owners. I acted for one in WA, the only person who went to jail in WA, and that was I'd take time off work. After going through that, that was terribly traumatic for everybody involved. If you are the chief executive officer of a big oil and gas or big power company sitting in a flash office somewhere, your chances of going to jail for a breach of health and safety legislation are next to zero. So do not be concerned about innovating in this area. If you are a small business owner, if you are a farmer or a tradie, you're fucked. All right? There is no neat, comfortable way to work through that. Every prosecution of every company officer in Australia ever, apart from one decision back in about 2018-19, the Ritchie decision, small business owner, hands-on, day-to-day, holding the ladder, that sort of stuff. And... The legislation is horrifically unfair in that way. Horrifically unfair.
I have to say there's some upvoting on the comment that says, Greg's truth was refreshing and confronting at the same time. That was brilliant.
Aww.
So kudos to you. I just thought another good one. Where are we here? With regard to investigations and the use of learning teams within an organization,
yep.
Formal statements, formal witness statements, are they required? Are they helpful from a legal perspective?
No. There was a case... is this being recorded? we've had a prosecution recently in where one of the cases I was involved in, first time a mining supervisor had been prosecuted following fatality. Two health and safety, so as a principal and a contractor, the two health and safety advisors, one from each organisation, went, there's a body down a hole. It took us 8 hours to get the body out. The body was still in the hole, and they went and got a written witness statement, two separate written witness statements off the supervisor. And those documents were not privileged. I know we've talked about privilege. They had to be handed over to the regulator. There was nothing anybody could do for that person from a legal risk management point of view after that. All right. No, they're not. Witness statements are not required. Witness statements and interrogations are not a good way. And you all know this, right? It's not a good way to actually understand the truth of what happened. Okay. If I'm briefed as a lawyer to do so, yes, I'm going to take a witness statement. Why? Because I've got to put a person in the witness box and I've got to ask them questions and I need to know what they're going to say. And if they say something different, I need to go to the legal practice board and say, this is what they told me first, so I haven't done anything unethical here. You don't need to do any of that. You just need to talk to your people.
One more. With various recent workplace deaths of young apprentices, why should heads not roll at organizations that cut corners at a corporate level just to save a buck?
I understand the question. I do. But if you are going to apply that logic at a corporate level, you do not get to sit in a room like this, with all due respect, and say blame fixes nothing and context matters. Because those people are trying, generally, yes, are there some recalcitrant people out there who probably deserve retributive justice? Yes, there are. Okay, I can happily live with that. Are there the sociopathic workers in our organisation who deserve to be sacked from time to time? Yes, there are. The problem we have is that we have created a model of retributive justice that is intentionally designed to scare the shit out of everybody. And if you want to understand how that is playing out, in April last year, we had an inquiry in Western Australia into the high number of fatalities in the agricultural industry. And there is an on-the-record finding by the inquiry that industrial manslaughter is a double-edged sword. It has raised awareness, and it has meant that nobody wants to talk to and engage with the regulator anymore because they are all scared of going to jail. We need a model of regulation in this country, and we're not going to get it, so this is all care, no responsibility, but we need a model of regulation in this country that allows us, within a very short period of time after serious workplace accidents, to explore, understand, learn and share. And at the end of that process, there can be a mechanic whereby the inquiry says, and by the way, as a recalcitrant employer, you are referred off to prosecution. But I'm going back to 79 and the Robins report. Prosecution ought to be the instrument of last resort if we want to learn how to keep our people safe. At the moment, it is the expectation of first resort, and it shits me to tears. It pays my bills, but it shits me to tears.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.